Hi everyone, I'm Penny L, and I am an alcoholic. I think we should have 20 minutes of quiet time. What do you think? Yes? You know, I have escaped speaking at this meeting twice, almost three times. And both times I had valid reasons I couldn't be here. And one time I actually nominated my husband. So here I am finally, right? It is a little bit intimidating, and I jotted down some things just because sometimes when I get nervous, they're just things to help me get out of my nervousness in case I go off on a wacky area. You know, that prayer, I've never been here. That prayer, there's some areas in that prayer that I'm going to be speaking to tonight. So I broke it down into three parts. Every place that there's a comma. We were talking about commas this evening. Haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You know, in the big book, it talks about spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, and Silkworth actually calls it a psychic change. And like all of those things kind of mean the same things. But, you know, ultimately, for myself, I had enough of a personality change in order to recover from my addictive alcoholism. And the more I learn about this program and from my spiritual awakening, the more I appreciate it. It is remarkable to me that all I did was become a drunkard woman, and I have been given this awesome life. And you know, if that's not God, I don't know what is. I mean, I don't know how much more I could have messed up my life, and God snatched me out of that world and into a new freedom and a new happiness, as is mentioned in our big book. just looking at some things here. You know, it talks about in the big book that this spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. And the 12 steps allowed me to embark on a journey, if you will, in order to know how to live a spiritual life. I really didn't have the tools when I came to the program. I mean, I had a lot of misconceptions. I thought going to church was living a spiritual life. But I didn't know how to incorporate God into my life in such a way that it was the most, today it's the most intricate part, the most precious gift that I was given in these rooms. But I didn't know how to do that. So I love that this is not a theory. This is not something that somebody shared with me intellectually. This is something that was shown to me. And by working the steps, you know, and going through that, then I even learned more that it's not a theory, because in sponsorship, I get to extend that to a new woman. And so I'm you know, again, I get to see it in action, you know, and I need that. I don't do well with abstract. That's why I'm not a math major. You know, in that God consciousness that occurs, even, you know, I was thinking about this today. I hope I can explain this properly, but even when I go through my deserts, my dry times, when I feel like God isn't there, it's like that's still God consciousness, because I know God's not there. You know, prior to program, I mean, I abandoned God. God wasn't there at all for me. And, you know, it wasn't even a thought. And today, when God's not, when I don't feel close to God, I know I don't feel good, close to God. So I know that that's a God consciousness that I'm very, very grateful for. And again, as a result of working all the 12 steps, you know, because it clearly says that it's the result of these steps, you know, I'm able to have that a spiritual awakening. Two, carry this message. Once in a while in the morning, my husband and I on Saturday morning will have a chat, and I really dislike chatting about program with him, because he gets really fired up, a little bit too fired up for me, you know. And he'll try to say that he's laid back, but he is. But when it comes to the 12 steps and 12 traditions, whoa. So it's kind of like that old commercial where the guy's in front of the speakers and his hair all, I mean, that's what I felt like last Saturday morning at 7 a.m. I just went down to have a cup of coffee, and he said, carry this message. You know, we hear people say, carry the message. No, he says, it's carry this message. Well, I don't want him to hear this tape because I'm a little bit agreeing with him, and I don't want that to come. But, you know, he had a point, and I got it, and I was trying to go off in some other area. But it is this message, the message of the 12 steps. It's not my message. It's not your message. It's not anybody's message. It's the message that's written out in our book. And sometimes that can get convoluted for me when I'm sponsoring somebody, because it's like I want to share what my experience has been. And you know, there's a time for that, but there's also a time for, okay, it's pretty cut and dry here. These are the 12 steps, and this is how we work them. The instructions are in first 164 pages of the big book. And so I just thought I'd throw that out there, that the word is this, not the. And I was reminded of that a couple Saturday mornings ago. And you know, my primary service that I perform is, you know, carrying, you know, I shouldn't say carrying, but helping somebody go through the 12 steps. That's my job. You know, that's how I really look at sponsoring people. It's not to be your buddy. It's not to, you know, be your counselor. It's not to be your banker or your taxi. I mean, initially, I mean, those things might happen under certain circumstances, but it's about getting you through the 12 steps. That's my primary goal. And, you know, I'm selfish. I mean, I'm not going to do this. Come on. You know, there's a reason I do this. It says practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. We can help when no one else can, and we can secure someone else's confidence like nobody else can. And boy, did that really validate me in a weird way when I first came to the rooms. And that, you know, as I started out sharing that I'd really messed up my life, and here God has blessed me so much, and to feel that sense of worthiness, like all of the carnage and wreckage from my past, oh my gosh, I can share that with somebody and maybe help them. I mean, what a wonderful gift that is. It was for me anyways. You know, and by carrying the message, you know, one of the results is that life will take on a new meaning. And I guess that's kind of a continuation of what I was just sharing, is that, you know, being able to watch people recover, get well, to have hope in their life, to have direction, to have purpose, just to stop the madness of you know, active alcoholism. I mean, what a wonderful experience. And all of that, you know, allows me to get outside of myself. You know, I am almost all the time pretty self-consumed. I'm highly aware of that, and it's quite irritating most days, you know. It's like I want to shake it off, you know. And, you know, last night I had two of my sponsees call me, and it was really nice. I don't usually get two sponsee calls in one night. And it was, you know, it was an opportunity to just sit back and chat for half an hour, you know, and you know, really focus on somebody else's, you know, life. And it was all good, and but to kind of get away from me. You know, one of the things that I was sharing last night is with one of my sponsees. She has had, you know, when I'm working with others, my life changes, you know, because I get to see what they're going through, and they're such great teachers, and I am so grateful for the life that I have, because, and I learn so much from them. This one woman, she's got an active husband, and she's got a son that has overdosed I don't know how many times, and I think about the terror and the fear that she must have. Most days, wondering if she's going to get that phone call, you know? And I think, wow, that's not my life at all. You know, I've been able to kind of, you know, put myself in an igloo, and my family's not like that. And I was the one that was causing that grief for my parents and my family. And so listening to her, you know, share, you know, that most days she's okay with that and some days she's not, it just really inspires me to stop whining, you know, about what's going on, you know. There's some things when I'm carrying the message, you know, we have a saying, carry the message but not the mess. And I jotted down some things. Well, I guess what I'll say is that some of the other issues that my sponsees have shared with me over the years, or I've had the opportunity to kind of experience, you know, financial hardships. You know, I've seen them overcome that. I've seen them overcome the death of a loved one. You know, we were talking about the death of a sponsee, you know, and how difficult it is to see the family afterwards. And you know, I had the opportunity to take a woman that I've been sponsoring for a couple of years to a viewing, and it was her first time that she's had this experience. If we stick around these rooms long enough, we're going to have that experience. And it was, I was glad that I could be there and be supportive and help her kind of just think through all that had just happened. You know, sometimes, you know, people go back out, sponsees do, and they end up getting in institutionalized, you know, either in prison or MH or whatever, you know. Chronic relapse, you know, I'm so grateful that's not my story. I don't understand why it's not my story. I mean, I quite honestly, I don't think I have another recovery, so that's maybe why God's protected me from relapsing. But, you know, those are issues that are part, for me, carrying the message and knowing how to steer all of those big life things back to the 12 steps, you know. And it's not always easy. It's easy for me because everything's the 12 steps, but it's not always easy when the sponsee's really hurt and they don't want to hear any of that AA analytical bull crap, you know. They just want a quick fix, or they just want to be angry, or they just want to be hurt, or they just want to quit, you know. And I know that that's not the solution. So sometimes I feel like my role is to be the cheerleader and just do whatever is necessary in order to help them get over that hump. You know, when I start working with a new person, you know, there's kind of like that honeymoon phase where, you know, I don't ask a whole lot when I'm starting out with somebody, you know, make sure they're getting the meetings, give me a few phone calls, you know, trying to find out where their head's at. You know, and part of that process, you know, is to find out if they're really serious about, like, hey, do you really know what's going to be asked of you here soon? Because some people are just totally unwilling to, you know, work the program as it was designed. And if that's the case, then I have nothing to offer you, you know. And that usually, that discussion usually rolls around after 2 or 3 weeks, after a few phone calls and getting to know each other. And I'm hearing things like, you know, I don't want to go to meetings, or that's a dumb meeting, or, you know, I don't like that person there, or I don't want to work the steps, or, you know, whatever, all the excuses that we can hear. You know, there comes that time when sometimes I have to, you know, just say, this is all I have to offer, and if you don't want it, sorry, you're going to have to, this is all I got. This is all I'm going to talk about is the 12 steps, because that's what got me sober and has kept me sober. And then there's that, during that honeymoon phase, which is, you know, the first few months, you know, kind of continues on, and there's all that practical wisdom that we can, you know, first things first, and all those silly slogans. I absolutely despise those slogans, and now, you know, they're not silly at all. I mean, they're very deep for me. You know, and answering questions like, you know, what do you do when you have a drinking situation, you know? And the big book says, you know, if you have a good reason to be there, great. And if not, don't go. you know, don't try to live vicariously through others. Work problems. Oh, we all have those, right? But, you know, today I realize that God's my employer. And so I try to go into work with that mentality and a little gratitude that, hey, I have a job. And so, you know, I share my experiences in the workplace. Back when I used to, you know, have quite an attitude and thought the world was owing me whatever. You know, when it comes to family problems early on, you know, I encourage new women to, you know, trust in God and be patient. I mean, there's only so much you can share with the new person, you know, during the honeymoon phase. And it's like you work your program and they'll work. I mean, you got to be kind of careful, especially with women. I do anyways. So it's like, trust God and be patient, you know. You know, you kind of delay the big discussion. Like, there's nothing that you're going to do to make a change, but you're going to change and everything's going to change, you know. I mean, there's no way of conveying that early on. Another thing I might do is, you know, suggest that they read to wives. Because there's a lot of information about dealing with the family and two wives, and you got to be careful of that because, you know, we're all sensitive about the two wives chapter. You know, what do I do when my old friends are having a picnic and they want to invite me over? You know, how many of those old friends came to your rescue when you're trying to get sober? Probably a big fat zero. I know that's how many came to my rescue. And so I share my experiences about, you know, my friends were never there even when I was drinking. I didn't even have friends when I was drinking. I had drinking acquaintances, but I never had friends until I came into the rooms of AA. Prayer and meditation, I'm always interjecting that to try to, you know, develop good habits early on. Meetings, how many meetings do I have to go to? What do we say? Until you want to go to them. And so that's, you know, there's so many, we're so blessed in this area that if you don't like a meeting, there's probably two or three more that evening that you can try. Read our basic text. You know, I think a lot of times, I know I did early on, once you work your steps, you put the big book away. You know, and it is our basic text. That means it's something we're supposed to go back to over and over and over again to study it. So I encourage a lot of reading initially during the honeymoon phase. You know, and issues about money that can be problematic and sensitive. And, you know, again, what can you say, really? You know, you pray and go to work if you can, you know. You know, trust the process. Things are going to work out. And you know, eventually after all of this happens and you get your sponsee through the 11 steps, there comes that wonderful day when it's time for them to sponsor. And I got a couple women right now that are just embarking on that journey, and it is so cool. They're so nervous about sharing their experience, strength, and hope with a new person. But they have it. You know they have it. As soon as they start interacting, they're going to, like, it's just going to come out. It just does, you know. And so that's a really neat part of, you know, carrying the message. How am I doing for time? Okay. Don't want to run out. Okay, because I don't have anything after 3 here, which is practice these principles in all our affairs. And I was thinking about the 12 traditions, you know, the principles as I understand them, and I don't know if I'm incorrect, are the 12 steps. And I was thinking, well, what have I learned from the 12 steps and the 12 traditions? What are the principles of that? And one of the things that came to mind was to serve and not govern. And how I practice that outside of the rooms of AA is in my work environment. You know, that it's a change of attitude, a change of perspective. When I go to work, if I'm not the boss, then I shouldn't be acting like a boss or talking like I'm a boss or complaining that I'm not the boss. I'm not the boss, you know? I'm not there to govern. I'm supposed to work and do my job. You know, thank goodness I gave that up a couple of decades ago, you know? And I had a woman approach my QB this morning, and she was all upset because people, upper management, made a decision to do X, Y, and Z, and it's a pain in the behind. Yeah, we all have to do it. She was all wound up, and I thought of that, you know, that, you know, I'm not there to govern. I know what my job is. It's not to govern. If I'm supposed to govern, I'm going to, you know, then I will do that. So that was one of the gifts I got from learning about our 12 traditions. Anonymity. You know, obviously I know what that means in the rooms, but outside of the rooms, it to me is about respecting others. You know, I don't have to go and share intimate details about this coworker, for instance, unless I need to share it with my sponsor because it's under my skin. But I don't need to go share it with other coworkers. You know, to me, that's gossip, and it's not respectful. She is where she's at, he's where he's at, and I'm where I'm at. And I wouldn't want people to disrespect me because of where I'm at, because, you know, I came into these rooms, you guys accepted me, and I was a mess. You know, what a wonderful gift that was, is to be loved just because I was a drunk and I had messed up my life and I did these horrific things. And I come in here and you respected me just because I was a drunk, you know. And I get that today because I'm in AA, but outside of AA, you know, that's something I learned. Other people also deserve my respect regardless of where they're at. Attraction, not promotion. And you know, that's something that, you know, in work, it, probably more for me in the home, I can be very competitive with my husband because of feelings of unworthiness, you know. So I can try to promote myself and say, you know, it's tough being married to a really intelligent guy. It's really annoying, actually. And so anytime I can get one up on him, you know. So, but that is like me trying to promote myself. And I learned in the rooms here that's not spiritual. You know, that's not spiritual anonymity. As far as other principles that come from the 12 steps, you know, the prayer was talking about being open-minded. I don't know if I've become more open-minded or more closed-minded. I guess I've become more sure-minded. So that can maybe come off as being closed-minded. But with other people, I definitely have become a lot more open-minded. I mean, purple hair, come on. Go. Always wears orange. Come on, you know. You know, I'm definitely able. It doesn't matter what we look like. What matters is that we all have the same feelings inside. And I would have to say that I was not always a person like that. I pretty much judged you by the way you looked, you know, or the vibes that you were given off. And today, yeah. I'm definitely not like that. You know, I want to get to know everybody. I find it fascinating and interesting. And so I've been able to take that open-mindedness and apply it to all areas of my life and all the people that I meet throughout my day. Perfect and enlarge my spiritual life and avoid contempt prior to investigation. If I was given any wonderful tool, it was the encouragement to continually, you know, seek God. I seek God in the morning. I have quiet time or meditation. All the steps are spiritual to me. It's all about having that connection. And so when I'm out there in the world, I try to find that in people. I think people are looking for that. I think most of us, when we come in the room, I know I was looking for the spiritual answer. I just didn't know how to get to it. And when it was revealed, it was like, wow, this is exactly what I was looking for, and I didn't know how to acquire it. So in my day-to-day goings, if I can enlarge somebody else's spiritual life by being okay with talking in spiritual terms, you know, there's a time and a place for that, I do that. Avoid contempt prior to investigation. I guess what I learned here is that I've seen so many people downtrodden and troubled, and you know, our lives are in the toilet sometimes when we get here, and then we rise above it, you know, and so you get to see the caterpillar to the butterfly. And sometimes I got to remember, well, maybe this person is the caterpillar I'm running up against too in life out here. And how can I judge them? You know, maybe I can instill a little hope into their lives. Willingness is the spiritual cornerstone. Willingness is the spiritual cornerstone. I have bouts of willingness. I'm not always willing. I was extremely willing probably the first 5 years of my recovery, and then you kind of get like a little lazy, and then you have a resurgence, like, oh, I'm all into it. You know, it ebbs and flows for me. But the thing is the willingness, you know, outside of these rooms, like having lunch or having a bowl of soup before coming to the meet. I mean, I just don't do those things. I'm kind of in a rut where, you know, I have my little routine, and I get up at this time, and I do these things, and I go to work, and I come home, and I do those things. And, you know, there's a need for me in my recovery to have a willingness to try other things, and usually that willingness is to engage with other people outside of the rooms of AA, if it will be, or even inside of the rooms of AA. So, you know, willingness to try something has always been a struggle for me, because I'm a very, somewhat of a disciplined, boring person. Okay. Trust God. You know, how many times do we talk about God in these rooms? And so I've had many opportunities where I had nothing left but to trust God. And that has been something that doesn't always go off well with people that are not having a good time. You know, they don't want to hear that, right? But, you know, I trust God, and so I can pray for that person. They don't have to know I'm praying for them, or maybe they're comfortable that they do know, but, you know, I do. I trust that everything happens for a reason, and some people don't have that mindset. I do. The good, the bad, and the ugly. It all is just the way it's supposed to be, and I trust God. I trust God with every part of my being. Don't gossip. Sometimes there's really sneaky ways of sharing things about other people's lives. You know, like if you were in a church, you would say, well, let's pray for Robert, because he's really going through it, and blah. You know, I don't want to talk about this person in the program, but, you know, this is what, you know, we have to be, I'm very cautious of that. And so I try to be very cautious of that. And I kind of touched on this a little earlier about in the workplace, and gossiping does not, if I'm not building somebody up, then I'm probably tearing them down. And that's none of my business. You know, I had enough trouble just getting sober. I didn't need people out in my life tearing me down, you know. I need people there to support me and assist me in trying to get better, but somebody tearing me down is not going to be helpful at all, so I try to be very mindful of that. I learned through the 12 steps about being honest, and being honest with you and being honest with myself. And I think until I'm honest with myself, I can't be honest with you. And that is very difficult. And some of the application, some of the ways I've applied that out in the world is, you know, I'm in that checkout line that we all know about, and I'm not getting the service that I like. And so, I mean, I'm not rude, but my actions are like rude. They're agitated, you know, I'm whipping out my card and screaming, and then I have to go back and apologize. You know, that's being honest, because I want to justify, well, you know, she didn't take my coupon, and now I got to go to the service desk and get my 75 cents, and what an inconvenience. You know, I don't want to be honest. I want to, like, project all that energy on the person that was checking me out when it was just a mistake, or maybe she's incompetent. What's it matter, you know? The point is that nobody, if they're incompetent or they forgot, deserves to have my wrath or have my attitude. Like, how's that going to help her or him? So, you know, being honest with myself and not justifying my actions because somebody else's actions weren't so great is a part of honesty for me that I use outside of the rooms. You know, love and tolerance, oh boy, that's a tough one. You know, love is an action. It's not all this mushy-wushy feelings. It is a lot of effort. It's sacrificial. To really love somebody, I stink at it, you know, quite honestly. The only person in my life that I can even probably come close to saying I love unconditionally would be my daughter. And I come short of that probably once a day, you know? I mean, I can't, obviously I'll never be able to perfectly love somebody, but I do know what it, you know, from working the steps, especially like during my fifth step, I had the experience of my sponsor loving me after I just got done sharing all this stuff about myself. And like, she didn't even care. Like, is that all you did? What's the big deal? That's not the goal of that stuff. The goal is what's in the last column. Why did I do those things? Not what did I do? And it's like, that was one of my early introductions to what love was like, an unconditional love, you know? And I've had that experience, you know, through, especially in the last 5 years, you know, I've had some really life things happen in the last 5 years of my life, and I've had a group of women that have been very close. I have allowed them to be very close, and I've experienced the unconditional love. Like, they don't care what I look like or what I sound like or how I'm behaving. They still love me just the way I am. So that's really cool. Meet my responsibilities in life like I do in recovery. And I haven't struggled with that too much, but that's something I met, that I have a responsibility in my recovery. You know, go to meetings, call my sponsor, work the steps, sponsor others, get a home group, read my big book, you know, the list, however long it is for each of us that have the program. And so I have to, like, for me, I transferred some of that into my day-to-day. You know, what are my responsibilities? Stop whining about them. Yes, I got to do the dishes. I ate, so I probably have dishes to do. Yes, I have to go to work. Yes, I have to cut the grass. Yes, 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 yes. I have to. Those are my responsibilities. Those are my problems of privilege, you know. And it allows me to step up to the format and, you know, step up to the plate, I should say, and stop complaining about, you know, the way that my life is. Like, you would think it was so terrible. Are we getting to the end? Because I'm to the end. It is. I have one more, but I'm going to save it. No, that's it. Here we go. Fire it off.
Hi, my name is Samir. My name is Samir. I'm an alcoholic. And what was the one more thing you were going to say?
Oh, go to any length for my sobriety. In the real world, you know, sometimes I'm not a person that puts I'm not very tenacious all the time, I guess is what I'm saying. And I think about, I have two viewpoints in this. Sometimes I feel like the amount of effort I put into my recovery was nil compared to the amount of effort I put into my drinking. So a part of me is like, well, I haven't put much effort into it. And then on the other hand, I think, well, yeah, I did put some effort into it. I showed up. I did what I pretty much was told to do in the rooms of AA. So to go to any length for my sobriety, that is a principle. To practice that in all of my affairs means that sometimes I have to be a little bit more tenacious out there in the real world, that sometimes I have to go to any length, maybe to take care of a family member who's sick. You know, my parents are aging. You know, I might have to give up a week and a month and go out and take care of their property. I have a job that I'm salary, and I've been there 3 years, and I've never really had to work over. You know, it's like going to 8:30, leave at 4:30. You know, I might have to put a little effort into getting these projects done. So having it's this principle. It's the principle of, you know, am I willing to go to any length for my sobriety? I should be able to go to any length in the rest of my life when life calls me to do so. The end.
Question?
Okay, I'm not trying to be facetious or funny when I ask this, and maybe there's no answer, but we're told that we're to practice these principles in all our affairs. Why is it at every AA meeting that something has to get done, or group conscious meeting, the principles just go out the window?
Why? Ego.
Why is it you get a group of drunks together and forget about the principles? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, they tell us that we're to practice these principles. You know, some people need to practice more. Some of us have practiced enough that we can kind of back off and let things, you know, unravel. And you know, that responsibility of those of us that have been around long enough to put a few soothing words out, to kind of maybe phrase a question in such a way that it's not attacking but thought-provoking. I mean, I know exactly what you're saying. I've experienced it, and you know, nobody likes confrontation, me included. But I'm very careful about how I try to be very careful, except around my husband or family members. I'll say something inappropriate or harsh. But you know, I think everybody wants the good of the group, and so everybody's got their opinions. And I think we can get very passionate and heated about what we think. In addition to people just thinking that they always have the right answer. So.
Brian, an alcoholic.
Hi, Brian.
Penny, thanks for sharing. That was very nice. Thanks for sharing about how we take that 12th step to people that we work with and live with by our actions, by our lifestyle, and to sponsees, you know, in a more directed 12-step mm-hmm. fashion. I guess what I'm wondering is that the ones in between that you might encounter in life where they're not looking for sponsorship. They might be in need of sponsorship, but don't know it yet. And how do you bring to them the message in any more directed way, at the same time maintaining your anonymity? You know, how do you compromise all that?
You know, I know for myself, it's a matter of willing to put myself out there. You know, you're talking about, it sounds like somebody that doesn't necessarily know that you're in program. And, you know, pretty much at this point in my life, I'm an open book. I'm very comfortable with the fact that I'm a recovering alcoholic. I don't announce it, but whenever I think that there's an opportunity to help another person, I would share that. And then there's always a story, you know, from the very beginning. You know, it says that we can help another alcoholic in a way that nobody else can. You know, we instantly got a notch up on all of that because we've had that experience and we are recovering. We have found the solution. So for me, it normally goes back to how comfortable am I about being honest, you know, and how much do I care for another person, put myself at risk, you know, that's that sacrificial love that, and then there's my selfish side, like, oh, geez, what if they really want help and they want me to help them, you know, I mean, yeah, I can get all wacky with it, but, you know, ultimately, I know what the right answer is. It's just whether or not I act on it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. And I was just wondering, you related this 12-step back to the previous 11 so much, and I was wondering, do you see that there's some traps or some pitfalls in looking at one step in particular without taking it in the context of the whole 12?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to just separate one out because, I mean, number one gets you to number 12, you know, and the whole purpose of all the 12 steps is to have a spiritual experience, you know, and for recovery. So I think it is difficult, but I get really jazzed up about the 12th step in that it's like it completes the circle and it's so rewarding and I'm sure there's people out there that have never worked a 12-step but have worked some of the steps, and I can't, it's like being a parent, you know, I was a daughter, but I never knew what it was like to be a parent until I became one. I understand my parents more now because I had the full experience, and that's what the 12 steps is like to me, is that I've had the full experience. I know what it's like to be the sponsee and the sponsor, and the joy of sharing hope and love with another person that is at the bottom of the rung, you know, it's hard to separate them out for sure, but I think this one was fairly easy, and you know, obviously it's a spiritual awakening as a result of these stops. I mean, you cannot give something away you don't have, and if you're trying to show somebody spiritual stops and you've not had the spiritual experience from working them, I think it's going to be difficult to convey that to a newcomer. Hope that answered your question.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think we're going to go to our final question.
All right.
Go to our first question.
Thank you. My name is Samir. I'm an alcoholic. Well, and I kind of have a two-part question. Well, my first question was, you kind of remind my therapist, and she won't let me see her since I'm living in Erie, but she told me, last time I saw her, she just gave me a piece of paper about codependency, and I was wondering if you had any ideas about how the 12 steps addresses that kind of a thing, and then I wasn't following real closely. I heard you talking about all these things at the end, this, that, and the other, something I forgot. But is that what the spiritual experience thing you were talking about, or what the spiritual experience? How about
that? That was the beginning of the talk, and towards the end, it was about working these principles in all of our affairs. And so I was given examples of what I learned from the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as far as principles are concerned in recovery. Codependency. What would I tell somebody that I was sponsoring? I would say, you work your program and they would work theirs. Wonder where I heard that, right? you know, that is a spiritual sickness. I mean, I experienced that early on in my recovery, and finding out what my identity is and my higher power, and really delving into the spiritual component of my God, you know, of the 12 steps, understanding my God. I mean, I'll never understand God, but, you know, understanding God enough to know that, you know, where my worth is. And working the 12 steps and having the ability to sponsor somebody really allowed me to feel a part of. And it really allowed me to divert my focus from things of self and more on giving of myself. So, yeah, I don't know if that was helpful or not, but, you know, it's like the honeymoon phase, right? So you trust God, you know, you just do the next right thing, you keep working the program as it's being spoon-fed to you from your sponsor, and, you know, it all works out. It does, it really does.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
great. So I, you know, want to publicly thank Penny. I took away a whole lot of things to think of, some more than others.
Some I really need to think about. So, are there any announcements?